You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Threw up a video on Instagram today about Plumlee shooting around, doing some shooting drills. And that's the big story today. Paul Millsap back on the court, back participating in at least part of practice. Not all of practice, but part. And it sounds like it's just going to be, you know, people always have been asking me nonstop, you know, when's he coming back? When's he coming back? Nobody's made a, even today, there's no official timetable. Paul Millsap joked that he wants to play this Friday. So I think he's feeling closer probably than the training staff and the coaching staff are. But I think it's now one of those things where we're going to be talking about, you know, weeks and maybe even days rather than, you know, we're going to start to be able to kind of put a clock on it. So I think it's encouraging. The Nuggets sorely miss him. And it's going to be this last, whatever you want to say, this last like 2 months of the Nuggets season is going to be interesting. It's going to be, I think, stressful for Nuggets fans that are hoping for this playoff berth. And it's going to be a lot of things, but I think it's not going to lack for intrigue and storyline. So I'm excited to get to it. So it sounds, if I were to guess, I would say he's 2 weeks away. I would guess that he misses this three-game homestand and then the ensuing road trip that they go on. And then after that, I think we'll start to get reports shortly after that about his progress and maybe he's back. Maybe I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's back sooner than that, but that would just kind of be my guess. This episode of the show is going to be on Mason Plumlee's return, because as Paul Millsap was kind of the story today of practice and seeing him do drills, and Malone even talked about, oh man, I can't believe some of the things he missed, you know, 3-4 months of the season, he comes back and there's certain things where he just looks like his old self already. So I think that was really encouraging. But the other storyline kind of swept under the rug is that Mason Plumlee is ready to return to the team. And I suspect he will be playing on Friday, and with his return comes, I think, a shakeup in, or potentially a shakeup in the way that the Nuggets play, either positive or negative. We're not sure yet. And one of the things I want to do on this show is I want to present the case for three different starting lineups with the Nuggets, two involving Mason Plumlee and one not. The one that does not, obviously, is the starting lineup that they've gone to for the last couple weeks. But I want to kind of make the case for both of the Plumlee-Jokic combos that I think Denver might try. And I know a lot of Nuggets fans right now are thinking, what? But, you know, there's a lot, I think, to unpack in what's happened, what's transpired with this team over the last 3 weeks. And it's not, in my opinion, not necessarily as clear and dry as, okay, Plumlee got hurt and the team went on a run. I think there's a lot of other more important stuff that happened in that stretch, and that's kind of what I want to touch on. And then ask the question, can Mason Plumlee help the defense? I think there's no question about that. He absolutely will help the defense. But can he kind of maintain the style of play that the Nuggets have found? That's the big question mark. One little housekeeping item, though. I will be hosting the Locked On NBA podcast. I got promoted. In addition to doing this show Monday through Friday, on Fridays, I will be hosting the Locked On NBA podcast. So if you enjoy, I know a lot of the people that listen to the show only care about the Nuggets and not the NBA, but if you enjoy listening to me talk and share my opinions and you maybe have some time in your day for an additional podcast, subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast. Check it out every Friday. I'm going to be kicking things off this Friday. I have a co-host, Anthony Irwin, who covers the Los Angeles Lakers and hosts Locked On Lakers. The two of us will be hosting that show, talking about different teams around the NBA. And, you know, we'll touch on Nugget stuff on occasion, including this first episode on Friday. We're going to recap the Philadelphia-Orlando game. And then we're going to be talking about the Western Conference playoff race, as well as the best young cores in the NBA. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a Friday show, so we're going to keep things lighthearted, but always provide that same analysis I always do, try to share my notes on different things that I'm seeing around the league, not just with the Nuggets. All right, let's get right into it. The lineup that the Nuggets have gone to over this last this last 10 games or so since Mason Plumlee went down, the starting lineup: Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Wilson Chandler, and Nikola Jokic. That lineup, over the course of the year, has actually played, it's tied for the most minutes of any Nuggets lineup. Curiously enough, the other lineup to play as many minutes is the starting lineup of the first 14 games, which was Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Wilson Chandler, Paul Millsap, and Nikola Jokic. Which, by the way, that lineup I just, the second one, the one that started the first 14 games of the season, the seventh best net rating in all of the NBA for teams that have played at least 220 minutes, which is, they play 224. So you think that's a huge sample size, or a pretty good sample size for a five-man lineup. And the Nuggets have the seventh best five-man combo. Not best starting combo, best of any five. So you think, like, Golden State has their death lineup. It's not what they start with, but it's kind of their closing hammer lineup. That's a great one. The Nuggets starting lineup is right up there with it, and they played a bunch of minutes in a short sample size. So as great as the Nuggets have been, that lineup with Millsap, Jokic, Harris, Murray, and Wilson, just absolutely dominant. So I think there's so many reasons to be excited about Millsap's return, but you know, the fact that those five were able to mesh so perfectly right out the gate, even though their offense never quite got going, I think should give everybody hope, because we know the Nuggets are better right now than they were 50 games ago. But the Murray, Harris, Barton, Wilson, Jokic, we'll call this the Jokic ball lineup, because it's really three elite shooters in Murray, Harris, and Barton. One great stretch four. I think Wilson Chandler is a very good stretch four. At the small forward spot, I don't think he's as productive. So it's really a great offensive lineup to surround Nikola Jokic's talent with. And it's had a plus 5.7 net rating over the course of the year. It's had about a plus five net rating. So it's been slightly worse, actually, over the last 10 games than it had been prior. But still relatively the same. And 120.8 offensive rating. I don't think people understand this, because I just throw out numbers sometimes. An offensive rating, it's points per 100 possessions. So offensive rating is how many points you score. Defensive rating is how many points you allow. The Nuggets are scoring 121 points per 100 possessions. So to put that in perspective, that is super elite. The best team in the NBA is at like 114 as a team right now. This is 7 points per 100 possessions better than the best team. Now, of course, every team has like certain lineups that are better than others. But it just goes to show that that lineup that the Nuggets have had has just been absolute dynamite on the offensive end. Now, the problem is, it has a 115.1 defensive rating, which would be the worst in the league by, you know, it would be the worst defense in the league if that was a team. And the Nuggets have, in fact, been the second-worst defense over this last – or third-worst defense over the last 10 games. So it's not a surprise. That offense runs teams off of the floor, and but unfortunately can't stop anyone, but they've been able to outgun. Now, what's curious is the Nuggets did this last year, and they did it for 4 months, and they've done it for 10 games now, and I think there's a – you know, you have to – human bias is an interesting thing, because I think you watch the Nuggets over this last stretch and you go, man, they're just so hot. It's not sustainable. Well, it had been sustainable for 4 months last year, and it was pretty sustainable for 10 games this year. So, you know, I have a little bit more faith than I think most that that lineup would continue to struggle on defense, but it would continue to win games because of how potent it was on the offensive end. Nonetheless, it is a problem defensively. And, you know, it is something that I think is a cause for concern. The next lineup, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Wilson Chandler, Nikola Jokic, and Mason Plumlee. This was the starting lineup for that January stretch that really struggled. And it had 169 minutes together, so another big sample size. It was a plus 3.8 net rating, so still a positive. In fact, a pretty good positive. 109.5 offensive rating is, you know, not bad. 105.7 defensive rating is really good, especially for Denver. So that became a good defensive lineup, but not a great offensive lineup. And I think one of the things that stood out about that lineup previously was that they never were able to get into, you know, what I call Jokic ball, this high-powered offense where, and it's, I call it Jokic ball, but it's really a credit to all of the players, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, you know, even Wilson Chandler. All these guys, if you play through Jokic where he becomes kind of the fulcrum of it, but everybody is contributing. And that style of play, I thought, never took off with this lineup. And the question, I think, you know, I think everybody draws the core, you know, there's causation, was it correlation does not imply causation. It doesn't mean that because those guys are on the court, they can't play Jokic ball. You have to think they didn't in the opportunity they had in late December, early January. And you have to wonder, what are all the factors that played into that? I'm going to argue later on that the lineup combination was not the most important factor in that, and that that lineup is actually capable of being a high-powered offense. But nonetheless, I don't know that that is the starting lineup I would go to. The next lineup I want to talk about, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Nikola Jokic, Mason Plumlee. So you swap Wilson Chandler for Will Barton. That lineup's only played 76 minutes together. They started to go to it right before Mason Plumlee went down. It has a plus 15.3 net rating. Now, it's important to note that this lineup has roughly one-fourth the minutes of some of the other ones I've been talking about. So it's a small sample size. And with small sample size, generally you get some more extreme net ratings. Plus 15, well, just for example, if you play the Houston Rockets once and get blown out, as the Nuggets have, your net rating gets completely screwed. The Nuggets got have been outscored against the Rockets by like 70, almost 80 points this season already. If you played the Rockets twice with any lineup and it got outscored like that, its net rating is going to be wrecked probably for the year, or at least for very, very, very long stretches. And so it's important when we look at the Nuggets, even when I talk about, okay, over the last 10 games, they have a, you know, second best offense, but third worst defense. Those numbers change pretty significantly if you just take out the Houston game. Then they're talking about the number one offense and like the number, 20 defense. So it's important, especially with these small sample sizes, to kind of say, okay, it's really at the mercy of one great game or one bad game. And the Nuggets have had a couple of both of those over the stretch, and the more they play certain lineups in different games, the more I think it could really taint some of the numbers. So take it with a grain of salt. 76 minutes, but a plus 15.3 net rating is pretty huge. 118.4 offensive rating. Now we're talking again about that defense or that offensive explosive lineup. That would be the best in the NBA again. So you're kind of capturing some of Jokic ball, but a 103.2 defensive rating is really, really good. So you kind of get the best, even though it's only 76 minutes, that lineup has kind of had the best of both worlds. It's had a great offense and a really good defense. So a couple things jump out. Will Barton might be the key, and I'm actually going to argue he is the key to unlocking the Plumlee-Jokic lineup in terms of just lineup combinations, not the key. I think there's another key, actually, to what makes any Nuggets lineup work on the offensive end. But I think he's the key. I think he's a better fit alongside Jokic-Plumlee. If the Nuggets decide to go back to Plumlee in the starting lineup, I have a feeling they will at some point pretty quickly. But if they do, I would expect that Will Barton is also alongside them. He provides a third elite outside shooter. Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton. You just think about a kick out to those guys, catch and shoot opportunity from the three. Any three of those guys is shooting it, I feel pretty confident that the ball's going in. I think open catch and 3-point shots, they all shoot a pretty high percentage, well over 40%. So I think it provides a lot of spacing. It also is three ball handlers. All three of those guys are capable of playing pick and roll, playing the dribble handoff game with Jokic, spacing the floor on the weak side, knocking down open shots. And that just makes up, I think that more than makes up for the lack of spacing you get with Mason Plumlee. Also, obviously, Wilson Chandler provides a three-point perimeter spacing that Mason Plumlee cannot. If Mason Plumlee stands behind the three-point line, people ignore him. But I think that adding Will Barton to that mix, I think, makes up for a lot of that and gives you enough of a threat to kind of stretch the defense. So I think Will Barton is a key to it. But the key and the biggest point of contention for me, and I think the biggest point and probably the thing that's going to determine the Nuggets season is, on whatever happens, whatever lineup they go to, the ball needs to stay in Nikola Jokic's hands. This is more important to me than any lineup combination. The style of play that the team plays, playing freely, not necessarily calling specific plays, but allowing the team to read and react to each other. And then most importantly, just playing through Nikola Jokic. And I need to make a couple points extremely clear here. Nikola Jokic has never once complained about playing alongside Mason Plumlee. I know a lot of people, I get so many like conspiracy theories about, oh, well, he hates playing with this guy or whatever. Not only do I not think that's true, Jokic himself absolutely hates it when that's even suggested. You know, early on in the season, I would ask him these questions about, you know, what's the difference when you're playing with this guy or that guy? And honest to God, I think it annoyed the hell out of him. He'd roll his eyes and he'd give a very, you know, he'd try to be very polite and cordial and say, hey, I'll play with anybody. But as these questions became more and more frequent, his responses would become more and more pointed, and sometimes he would just try to break the like, you could tell he would have to catch himself because he almost wants to do like a, oh my God, quit asking me this. But the other day after a game, he said, you guys keep asking me these questions. I keep giving the same answer. He goes, you guys think there's people on the team I don't like. He goes, the only person I don't like, and he kind of jokes and looks around the league and he goes, or around the locker room, and he's thinking, and he goes, Juancho. Just Juancho, like the nicest, most agreeable personality on the team. The point being, Nikola Jokic does not hate playing alongside Mason Plumlee. I think what Jokic likes and what Jokic needs more than anything is the style of play, and you can play that style with almost anyone. And Mason Plumlee, I think, can bring a new wrinkle to that dynamic if he makes a few tweaks to his game, and that's really what I want to get into. But so more important than the combination is the style of play and Jokic remaining the fulcrum. And here's some stats. Since Plumlee went down, Nikola Jokic is second in the NBA in front court touches. He's touching the ball in the front court over 57 times, 57 and a half times per game. Roughly the same minutes. I mean, he's playing like less than a minute more per game, so it's not like the minutes is the thing that's changed. He's touching the ball the second most. Only Marc Gasol touches the ball more in the front court than Jokic, 57 times a game. Prior to that, he was just 46 and a half. So basically 9 more touches per game in the same amount of time. He's averaging 9.2 post-ups over that stretch. Before, it was just 6.7. So again, it sounds like, again, the way they calculate post-ups is like, you know, the shot, assist, or actually just the shot or turnover comes out of the post. So he's actually touching it in the post significantly more. It's just that's how many more shots he's getting basically in the post. So he's getting 9.2 post-ups instead of 6.7. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think it's a little bit more difficult to post up when Mason Plumlee is in there unless you get a little bit creative as an offense. And he's making 73.5 passes, whereas before it was just 62.2. So what's interesting is he's getting 9 more touches per game, but making 11 more passes per game. So it's not like the more touches are going to more Jokic. You know, everybody knows this. Jokic's not a selfish player. The more times he touches it, it's just basically the more the offense, the ball begins popping in the half court. So more important than these combinations to me is the style of play. And here's the other thing. The Nuggets' identity is very clear, and I think it's extremely important. I talked about this earlier in the year. I've actually referred to it a couple of times that I felt like the Nuggets had an identity last year that they had lost this year. And part of that, I think, was they wanted to get away from being a bad defensive team. They added a piece in Paul Millsap, so the style was going to change. But I think that they've gotten back to it over the last 10 games. I know. You look at the Nuggets offense, the ball has been popping. They've been moving. It's just been this juggernaut of an offense that nobody has been able to solve. And, you know, no opponents have been able to solve. And it's just been so consistent. So in my mind, the task at hand for the coaching staff and for the team themselves, the players themselves, it's not to remake their identity. They have got to maintain this offensive identity, playing through Nikola Jokic, everybody passing the ball, spacing the ball incredibly well and free-flowing, just hitting punch after punch after punch, pass after pass, cut after cut on the offensive end until you wear a team out. They have to maintain that identity. So it's not to remake their identity. It should be to add a defensive identity alongside of their offensive identity. And that's the challenge at hand. I think that's the, you know, you hope everybody is on the same page with this. And for me, that's what I'm looking at. And that's why I think the return of Mason Plumlee is so important and why it presents a really, really interesting opportunity, not to destroy the offense, but to augment the defense and keep the offense where it's at. And it's very clear that Denver needed to improve their defense. I mean, I just wrote an article today on DenverStiffs.com with some video examples. I don't think Denver's defense was going to improve you know, there were things they could have done that were just, okay, guys get lost on rotations and there's a lot of execution stuff I thought they can improve on. But I don't have a ton of faith that the Nuggets defense was just going to get better without the addition of Millsap and Plumlee. I think that was more or less what they were going to be. Maybe they can marginal improvements here and there. I think Mason Plumlee has the ability to significantly improve the defense. And I think Paul Millsap, even more so. I think Paul Millsap, by the way, absolute stud. He was doing, as I was researching for this article, you're kind of going over lots of defensive possessions in a row. And it's just amazing how focused and ahead of the curve Millsap is on the defensive end. The guy is just like constantly on the lookout defensively, constantly rotating and just anticipating the plays so quickly. And he's so fun to watch defensively, just an incredible amount of focus and energy and awareness. So I think there's no doubt both of those guys can improve the defense. The question is, how can they fit in to the offense? So for Mason Plumlee, I think for Paul Millsap, that equation's a little bit different. He's, and we'll get to that maybe in a couple weeks when he's set to return. But things Mason Plumlee must do to fit into the offense. The first thing, and this is so much harder than I think people give it credit for. I think he has to accept a low usage role in Jokic lineups. This is difficult for a couple reasons. For one, Mason Plumlee is a guy that has a lot of talents. He's an incredible passer. He's one of probably the best five passing big men in the NBA, passing centers in the NBA. And you can make a case that he's like top three. I mean, he's thrown not just your basic backdoor passes and whatever. Like, he's thrown some really high-level assists in his career. He sets great screens. He's a good pick-and-roll player. All of that, I think, has to be scrapped in Jokic lineups, or at least, 85% scrapped. There's going to be moments where he's obviously going to be called to come out of the dunker and come up and do some other things. But the problem is, so much of his skill set is the same as Nikola Jokic, but not as good. And this is the hardest part. You know, Malone always talks about Mason's the guy that's most willing to sacrifice, and I believe that. He's always been incredibly cordial with the media. Teammates love him. I have no doubts that he is an incredible teammate and willing to do what it takes. This is a huge task, in my opinion, because what it's going to take from Mason Plumlee is to not do so many of the things that he has made his career doing. Playing the pick and roll. And again, just in these lineups, he's going to play a lot of minutes without Jokic, where he's got to kind of go back and forth between, being a low usage guy to being more of the ball handling big guy. But when he's playing with Jokic, especially in a starting lineup, his role becomes, I think, incredibly simple in terms of, like, he's not involved in a lot, but it's going to be really, really low usage. To me, that's what they need to do. I wrote a big article last year that I think was very, very popular amongst diehard Nuggets fans about why Kenneth Faried was such a good fit alongside Nikola Jokic. And it was because Kenneth Faried was a guy that just worked that dunker spot and he accepted that role. Like, he just wanted to get offensive rebounds and drop offs for dunks. That's and fast breaks. That was his bread and butter, and he stuck to it. He didn't try to shoot jumpers. He didn't try to do a bunch of crazy stuff. He'd get the occasional post up, but especially when he was playing with Jokic, he just went to the dunker and he just owned that spot. Well, I think Mason Plumlee has to own that spot. And by the way, people hate the dunker. I think most NBA players, there's very few that just have come up as a low skill but high, athleticism or whatever guy. And so a lot of these guys, you think about it, Darrell Arthur in high school was like a super skilled big man. I'm sure of it because all of these guys are incredibly talented. In college, a skilled big man at Kansas that could do a lot of different things. Now in the NBA, it's like, okay, you're as much as you're good at these things, you're not NBA good, so your game becomes more narrow. Well, people hate playing the dunker because that's like the most narrow job there is, especially for a big man. You just dunk the ball, you stay out of the way, and you rebound the ball, and that's it. Well, I think Mason has to take on that role in these specific lineups. The other thing he has to do is he has to space the floor a lot better in the dunker. not all players playing the dunker are the same. Not and the dunker spot, in case you're not familiar with this term, it's the spot right outside, you know, in high school you call it the short corner. It's right outside of the block, kind of below the level of the basket. It's behind the defense, and the whole point is you're out, far enough outside the paint that you keep the paint open for drives and cuts and post-ups and all of that, but you're close. You're just one step away so you can kind of catch a drop-off and put the dunk in. And you stay behind the defense so you have this sort of gravity behind the play that the team is always – the defense is always having to look back at you forward and kind of keep tabs on everything that's going on. I think some of the George Karl guys – the two best guys at playing the dunker on the Nuggets are Kenneth Faried, who doesn't play anymore, and Wilson Chandler, surprisingly. Wilson Chandler, when he's in these lineups, the starting lineup, he goes back and forth between being on the wing, being in the corner, but also playing the dunker. And he's really, really good at it. And I wonder if this is a George Karl trait. You know, George Karl famously had guys like Andre Miller standing out of bounds. As you know, he was George Karl, really great understanding of spacing on the floor, and so much so that the NBA had to change the rule, and now they no longer allow players to stand out of bounds. Like if you're on the court and you're purposely out of bounds, it's a penalty. So, but he was really, really good, and one of the, I think, the innovators of kind of teaching the modern spacing of the NBA. And part of that, I think, was how he had his players playing the dunker spot. Even Birdman, really good at playing the dunker. And when he went to play with LeBron James, it was part of the reason he worked so well in some of those Miami Heat lineups, was he was just good at spacing the floor, despite the fact that he couldn't shoot outside of 3 feet. Mason Plumlee, you know, I think he is always one or two steps too close to the paint when he's playing the dunker. He's not he's like at the level of the block and on the block or maybe a foot outside, whereas I think he's probably best served another foot lower on the court, so right at the out of bounds line, and another two steps, you know, outside of the paint. And he's a quick enough athlete that he can get to the rim and dunk it even off of just basically a drop step from that spot. But a lot of times, I feel like he's way too close to the basket. And, you know, you see that a lot in Jokic post-ups as well. When Jokic is posting up and Mason's on the opposite side in the dunker, he's so close to the block that his guy is able to kind of provide help and without giving up too much space on Plumlee. So I think that's one thing that, you know, if I were coaching the team, that would be like a thing I'd be focusing on with him, was where to be and how to space that spot more properly. He's got a rebound, and, you know, he's a really good rebounder. He's a hustle guy. I think the more narrowly focused your role comes on offense, the more you can, you know, the more easy it is to kind of execute different things. Denver's offense has been absolutely dynamite over this last 10-game stretch, but their rebounding rate has actually plummeted. Now, these two things are correlated. The more you try to offensive rebound, especially the more players you send to offensive rebounding, generally speaking, the worse your effective field goal percentage is. And what I mean by that is you miss more shots, but you get more second chance opportunities. For the Nuggets, I think that trade-off is actually negative. I think you'd rather have great spacing than offensive rebounding. But with Plumlee, you have an opportunity to have both. And with Kenneth Faried last year, you had that was one of the things that made it so well, is the team shot so well from outside because the spacing was great, but they also put pressure on the defense to grab the defensive glass, and Faried just feasted on the offensive boards. Well, I think this can be Plumlee's. I think Plumlee can get, you know, two or three putbacks, some putback dunks, but just putback second chance opportunities just off of playing the dunker. Oh, by the way, Torrey Craig also good at playing the dunker. It's not always just big guys. Sometimes it's guards that get down into that spot. He's got a screen. There are opportunities for him to kind of be a weak side screen hunter. You know, if Jokic is doing a pin down DHO on the left side of the court, I've talked about this in an article about a month ago, hunting for screen opportunities on that back side where the defense has their head turned. You know, when you design a play, we call these hammer screens, but there's opportunities just to kind of catch a guy off guard, a defender off guard who's in help side. You kind of pin him while he's in help side, and then that frees up a flare screen for a shooter. So these are the types of things I think he can do. But again, it's a low usage thing. It's not you set that flare screen and you immediately go into a pick and roll on the weak side. It's almost like he's got to set those and then clear out to the other side, let Jokic come and run those DHOs and PNRs again. And then lastly, finish at the rim. I think Plumlee's been up and down at that. He actually, I think, has the best percentage at the rim, so the percentages have been good. But there have been a handful of times where he's gotten some fairly easy drop-offs and not finished them. I think those were much more in like December. I think as the pairing rolled on, those guys kind of got more and more on the same page and started to finish a little bit better. So I'm actually a proponent, whether they start together or not, I think that these guys, first of all, they're going to play a lot together, and they need to they're going to need to be able to maintain this offense. But to me, it's less about who's on the court and more about what the style of play is. I talked about one of the reasons I advocated for going away from it, you know, in early January was because the Nuggets weren't establishing an offensive rhythm at any point in the game, and I just felt like that was so important for them. They have established that now, and so I think the team needs to just establish that offensive identity, and that's why it's so important. Now, here's the interesting thing I'll leave you with, because we're getting closer now to Millsap's return. I mentioned that lineup with Murray, Harris, Wilson, Millsap, and Jokic. 224 minutes and a +12 net rating. 112 offensive rating, which is good. It's really good, but it's not like the 118, 125 that the Nuggets have been doing recently, but they did have 100.5 defensive rating. I think Wilson and Millsap were a really good defensive duo at the 3-4 spot. I thought Jokic's defense, by the way, was much better alongside Millsap. I think a lot of times players' defensive strengths and weaknesses, you know, your weaknesses look really, really, really bad when there's nobody there that kind of can make up for your weaknesses. Well, I think Paul Millsap makes up for a lot of Jokic's biggest weakness in the pick and roll. And as a result, Jokic doesn't look as bad in that specific spot on defense. And then he's able to shine in some of the other things that he did. So I actually thought Jokic's defense early in the season looked much, much better. And I think part of that is because Millsap is kind of a good balance to him in a lot of ways. But the lineup I'm curious about, and we mentioned if Plumlee starting, or as he returns and is going to be playing some minutes, you know, having Will Barton alongside him, I think, really opens things up. Well, the question becomes, I wonder if the same would be true alongside a Millsap-Jokic front court. Murray, Harris, Barton, Millsap-Jokic. That lineup has only played 12 minutes together, so we don't actually know. It's a +4, but that doesn't mean anything. 12 minutes basically means, you know, that sample size way too small to draw anything from. But it seems like it would be as effective. Now, it puts a lot of pressure on Paul Millsap, and Millsap a much more polished offensive and decorated offensive player than Mason Plumlee, so who knows if he'll be willing or if even he should take such a low usage role. But nonetheless, if they do try to commit to this Jokic ball and just play and continue to make him such a high usage player and a fulcrum of the offense, then maybe adding the three elite shooters in the backcourt with Millsap Jokic ends up getting the absolute best of both worlds. And now you get Jokic ball on the offensive end, you get Millsap covering you for you on the defensive end, and what you just have is a scary good team. I don't know. The other thing to think about is bench units. Even with the return of Mason Plumlee, you know, the Wilson-Lyles-Plumlee front court has had some major question marks. And if you are starting Barton and Plumlee and Jokic, then chances are you're going to get quite a few Wilson-Lyles-Plumlee minutes. The way I see it going is you start Murray, Harris, Barton, Plumlee, and Jokic, and at the six-minute mark you bring Wilson in for Plumlee, and you go back to that small ball lineup that's been working so well for 3 or 4 minutes. But then you bring Plumlee back in, and you take out Jamal Murray and Gary Harris. And at that point, you know, you got Wilson-Lyles-Plumlee without your two elite shooters in the backcourt, and maybe not even with Will Barton. Is there enough spacing there? That's a big question mark. There's a lot of size, and there's an opportunity to be pretty good defensively, but I just don't know if there's going to be if those second units can be big positives. So a lot of question marks, I think, not just with the starting lineup, but with the bench lineups behind it. This will come as a surprise, and I'll finish with this to you guys. I think I'm a proponent of it. I would actually give it a shot. If Plumlee's 100% and ready to go and play, you know, 25 minutes, I would actually probably move him back into the starting lineup, at least for a game and to see how it looks, in part because I really do think that prior to his injury, Plumlee was starting to kind of accept that role more naturally. You think back to that Knicks game. Plumlee was really a low usage guy in that game, and that was kind of the, even before he went down, that was the Nuggets were already starting to play more freely and through Jokic. He had a triple double prior to Plumlee getting injured, so it's not like he, you know, I think we were already starting to see the signs of things changing. And I think if Plumlee is willing to accept that, and that would be, I think the coaching staff can sell him on it pretty good, and I think just the success of the team can help sell that. Then I think he actually becomes a huge defensive boost without being an offensive burden. If nonetheless, I think you at least try it out over the next couple games and see how you do, and see how it looks. You're still going to get a lot of opportunities to play Jokic ball with four out with Jokic, but I think that there's a lot of advantages and a lot to be optimistic about Mason's return to these lineups. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. We'll have an episode again coming at you tomorrow following the Nuggets-Spurs game. Excited for Nuggets basketball to be back. This break has been killing me. But thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to leave a rating or a review on iTunes if you have not. I haven't gotten very many lately. I think I've only gotten one in 2018. So if you haven't done that yet, go ahead and hop on, write a quick review. I really appreciate it. I'll see everybody next time.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.